this anyway, just for kicks. Sam.
Welcome to season 2, episode 2. I am your host, Rob Johnson. And as you can twice a month, find us on Apple Podcasts, YouTube, Spotify, where you find your favorite podcast. You can find us there. It is Thursday, May 15th. And we are doing this somewhat live because, well, because we are. I was out of town part of this week and gathering some information for the show. Not when I was out of town, but a little bit today. And this seemed like a good time to record. The dogs seem to be napping. Although I have to say, very impressed with this microphone because in previous episodes, I've said, oh, the dogs are barking. I listened to the recording and you can't hear it. And in the last episode, I referenced my great aunt's grandfather clock and you couldn't hear that. So the microphone does a great job of picking up the voice and not the other noise. So I need to get in the habit of just not saying, oh, there's the dogs again or whatever the case may be. At any rate, so glad you're here. So today's episode, we're going to focus on a few things. We're going to hit hotels. We're going to talk about that. We're also going to talk about when you get sick on the road, some best practices, things to consider. I think a lot of people probably go into panic mode when they get sick on the road, but folks, if you travel with any regularity at all, it's going to happen. And I've got a couple stories I'll share and then also some best practices. And then we'll finish out the episode with some industry news, some interesting stuff that's come out as it relates to communications within the air traffic world. So we'll talk a little bit about that. And anyway, we'll go ahead and get started. Again, glad you're here. Actually, one thing before I do get started, I got quite a bit of feedback from folks related to my great aunt's interview in the previous episode and thought it was a great idea that I did it. Thought she did a great job and I couldn't agree more. So happy that I did it. And I thought she was absolutely wonderful. So again, thanks to our lovely Anna Lois down in Phoenix for being the very first interview on the Tales from the Air podcast. And quite frankly, glad that was the first one. So at any rate, we'll go ahead and get started. We are in the Tales from the Air studio this afternoon recording. It's the 15th of May. And let's get into talking about hotels. You know, if you don't travel with any regularity, a hotel, it's a room. But if you spend any amount of time on the road at all, a hotel is your second home, if you will, and you want to be comfortable. So I'm going to start kind of in one area and kind of work my way through and trust me, it'll all be connected, but I may kind of bounce around a little bit. So again, if you travel with any regularity at all, or even if you don't, and you want to capture some points and things of that nature, my advice is do your research and pick a hotel chain that you like. There's a number of them out there. I am a Marriott guy. Have been for quite a while. I like Marriott's. I stay at all different levels of Marriott's, and I like them. Now, part of the reason why I think I like them now is because I have achieved status with Marriott where I'm in their lifetime platinum elite status. So there's only one tier right now that is above where I am. I don't think I'll ever get to that one. And that's okay. I get really all the perks and whatnot I want from being platinum. But the nice thing is it's lifetime. So currently, with the work that I'm doing, I'm not traveling a lot. I'm doing a lot of things remotely and whatnot, or doing things here in the Kansas City area. So I'm not spending much time in hotels at all, but I maintain that lifetime platinum status. And so that's a real benefit, and I enjoy that. Now, had I been traveling at the rate that I was, say 6-7 years ago, or even 4 years ago, I would probably be on track to hit that next level, which I think is titanium, but I'm not for sure. I've kind of ignored it because I know that I'm not going to get there. But anyway, point is, pick a brand of hotel that you like that makes sense for you in terms of, do they have hotels in areas you travel? Number one. Number two, do they have a variety that you're able to take advantage of? The two that really jump out for me are Marriott and Hilton. There's a lot of similarities between the two, but there's also some differences. And so, you know, you want to find what works for you. You know, when you are out there traveling, just like with the airlines, I would recommend, if you're a bit of a road warrior, and if you are, you probably already know this, but if you are on the cusp of becoming a road warrior and you're doing your due diligence, I would have an airline credit card and I would have a hotel credit card to maximize those points. If you're company doesn't require you to put business charges on the company card, I would highly recommend, if you're getting reimbursed, I would highly recommend getting a hotel branded card, Marriott, Hilton, whatever, and then an airline. Now, again, not to beat a dead horse, but going back to kind of financial due diligence, pay those cards off every month, or, you know, if you can't, you know, build a plan to where you're paying those off in pretty short order, so you're not carrying a lot of interest and racking up a bunch of charges. So you want to make sure you do that. But that's one of the quickest ways to really build your points, is to take advantage of not only the double dipping when you're staying at the hotel, but there's different partners out there where you can purchase things, use that particular credit card and get more points. And next thing you know, you're racking up free nights at hotels that you could leverage for vacation, and you're watching your status steadily climb, which I can tell you is nice, because once you hit those top tiers, there's a lot of great perks. Excuse me, took a sip of my drink there. So let's get in a little bit to the hotels themselves and things to consider. Honestly, you want to look at what your trip is. And what I mean by that is, a great example is, there are times when my wife will travel with me on business, and we will gravitate towards, depending upon what the event is or the city we're in, we'll gravitate towards a Residence Inn. And the reason we do that is because you've got some space. Typically, we'll end up in a one-bedroom suite where you have a kitchenette, a living room, and then a separate bedroom, which is great for, you know, when I'm getting ready for my day, she wants to sleep in a little bit, you're not all in one room, and you have a little privacy, and it's a little quieter. The kitchen component is nice too if you're staying for any period of time, because you can bring some food in and whatnot, and it's not a full-size refrigerator, but it's pretty darn close. So you're able to, you know, bring in drinks and all that. And you're not having to pile them into the little hotel fridges that they have. I'll be honest with you, and I should have done the research on this. I'm not sure what the Hilton equivalent is to that. Probably the closest I can think of right now is Embassy Suites, where you've got a little bit more real estate to play with, where you've got the suite, excuse me, the bedroom area, and then the living area that's separated by a door, which again is just, it's nice to have that flexibility to do that. But, you know, when you think about if you don't travel a lot and you're going to at like an all-inclusive resort or something like that, you're talking apples and oranges from your traditional hotels. Most hotels don't have that level of service. They're not that nice. And obviously you don't have all the amenities that you would have at, say, an all-inclusive resort. So if that's your experience with staying in hotels, let me level set it for you. That those are unique, and you don't see those quite as often. But really, you know, I think the hotel chains have done a great job recently of really catering to there are certain brands that have more for the business traveler. And what I mean by that is you've got a large desk workspace, which is nice. You have a setup to where those hotels are located near multiple restaurants, so you're not having to drive a far distance to go get a bite to eat. Some of them will have a nice area, kind of a lounge area on the main level, not a bar, but just kind of an open area where you can kind of relax and you've got the TV on and you kind of get out of your room a little bit. So you have that flexibility. But I would highly recommend, even if you don't travel a lot, if you travel some, I would recommend signing up for the rewards program for a particular chain. And if it makes sense within your family budget and your financial goals to do a credit card where you can get additional points, I would recommend doing that as well, provided that you manage it efficiently. Do not get a card, rack it up, and all of a sudden, oh, here's the seventh credit card I have with $30,000 that I owe. Do not do that. Use it responsibly. So take a sip of water here. As much as I talk, and I talk a lot, for those of you that don't know me, I get parched doing this thing. So at any rate, the hotel piece, I will tell you, it's interesting from my perspective, and that's what I want to give you now is my perspective. Others could have a different perspective. The hotels really took a hit during COVID. You know, you saw travel grinding down to a halt. It took a while for it to ramp back up. And some of those services and amenities, quite frankly, have not fully come back pre-COVID. You will have, for example, they'll come in and clean the room every other day. Or if you're there for 2-3 nights, they won't clean it at all. And you can come down and get towels, or they'll bring towels up to you if you need additional towels. So, you know, some of that is they haven't got back to full staffing now that people are traveling more. You know, people left the hotels, either they were let go due to, you know, the downturn, or they left on their own. But they're not back to full staffing. And so I think that's an issue, depending upon where you are. With some of these hotels, you just don't you don't have the service that you had. So anticipate that going in, that it could be some adjustments from a pre-COVID perspective. So kind of moving on to looking at the, you know, what makes sense for you. You really, I think, once you start building up the loyalty, it really allows you an opportunity to try different brands within different hotels within the chain. You look at, again, I fall back on Marriott because that's where I have all my stuff. And, excuse me, and what you're looking at with Marriott is you have the full-service Marriotts, JW Marriotts, all the way down to the Fairfield Inn and a lot of things in between. They have boutique hotels, which you'll see in some cities that'll have kind of a unique name, but they're, you know, owned by Marriott. So as you're investigating where to stay and all that, really kind of look and see what makes sense for you. But if you're trying to build that, those tiers, that status, Marriott and Hilton both give you great options to where really no matter what you're doing or where you're going, you should be able to find something within that family realistically. So hotels, from the standpoint of what's important to me when I'm traveling and what do I want to see, you know, obviously you want to be clean. I like a big TV in the room. I like that. I think you can tell how much they've invested into the property by some of the things within the room. If the furniture looks like it was purchased during the Carter administration, then they probably have invested much into the other aspects of the hotel. The other piece too that I look at for me personally is what kind of shower do they have? Is it kind of an older shower head that you know looks like something they got, you know, 100 for $50 or something like that, or is the shower updated? And Marriott itself, I know, does a great job of within their hotels, you know, noting when you're booking if the hotel's been remodeled recently, things of that nature. But I track that as well. The other crazy thing, and I think I've mentioned this before when we were talking about luggage, but, I think the hotel pillows, for all intents and purposes, aren't very good. And so I will bring my own pillows if I'm staying for more than a couple nights. Now, if I'm driving, I have no problem putting the pillows in the car and away I go. I keep them in a pretty large suitcase. But at any rate, that's me. I'm a bit of a pillow snob. I admit that. Also, too, I get a little heartburn, so having the wedge pillow is nice, but it's just added to the bouginess aspect of that. But again, so for me, I really look at I like a good TV, a nice big flat screen. And I like to know that, you know, the bathroom's updated and all that good stuff. And I've left a hotel before. I've checked in to a hotel, not a brand chain, but it was off the beaten path that had been reserved for me by my company. This has been years ago. And I left. This was before you really got into the internet searches and were able to really gather good information. But nowadays, you can get a really good sense of what this place looks like. And if they're using old stock photos or stock photos, you're like, I've seen this before. They probably haven't updated their hotel realistically. So anyway, it's really all about what makes sense for you, what makes sense for your significant other or your family. the event you're going to. You know, a lot of folks these days, depending upon, you know, what type of event it is, if it's a family reunion of some kind, sometimes they'll gravitate towards an Airbnb and going that route. You don't see it as much on the business side of travel, but I know for personal travel, that has become a really popular alternative as well. But for business travel, I think you still see people traditionally staying in hotels. So anyway, talked a lot about that. We'll jump into other issues around hotels and other episodes as it goes on, but that's a good overview, things to consider and whatnot. So you're in your hotel, you're on the road, and you get sick. And I'm going to tell you two quick stories around that and talk about some best practices and things to consider. So I will first tell you the story about myself. The second one is about a former coworker, but the story about myself. So for years, I think 3, maybe 4 years in a row, I went to the same conference in Washington, D.C. It was always the couple days after the Super Bowl, it seemed, in Washington, and it was held at the National Press Club. And so we would stay just down the street, or next door, really, from the press club, at the JW Marriott. Beautiful hotel right there on Pennsylvania Avenue. Awesome hotel. Love it. So for 2 years in a row, I somehow managed to pick up a bug while I was traveling. The first year, I did not suffer any effects of said bug until I was back home in Kansas City and at my own place and all that. But year two, the second time it happened, I was actually at the hotel in Washington and got really sick. And it's one of those things where you're like, you almost lose all sense of you know, logic and everything else. You kind of go into a little bit of a panic mode. And what I quickly realized is there was absolutely no need to do that. This happens all the time. Let's figure it out. So the first thing I needed to do was figure out, did they have space in the hotel for another night? Very popular hotel, a lot of conferences rolling through, and just, you know, being that proximity to the White House and to Capitol Hill, you had a lot of business people in and tourists. So I was like, I need to make sure there's room. Well, not only was there room at the hotel the next night, the hotel honored my conference rate. So they did not charge me the rack rate that they could have charged, legally could have charged me. They just extended it a night and charged me the conference rate, which was very heavily discounted. So that was very appreciative. So that, in my mind, went a long way. So that was that morning when I realized I couldn't fly out that day. So I got my flight changed, all that good stuff, to the next day. And I was just kind of in, I need to maintain mode. And so I got extended the night. But what happens is with the electronics in the doors, if you don't get your key updated before noon, it won't work. And so, I don't know, it was probably 12:30, 1 o'clock. I had gotten up. I had been napping or something. Gotten up and thought, you know, I'm going to go get some ice. And some ice and a washcloth and put that on my head. I felt feverish and all that. So out I go, muster up the strength to head down to the ice machine and chip back to the door, and it won't open. And there I'm sitting or standing at the door, and I'm like, there is absolutely no way I can make it down to the lobby. And I think I had flip-flops on, but I was wearing like some, you know, just t-shirt and I think I had, you know, running shorts or something like that on. Anyway, so there was a housekeeper fairly close by, and she was able to connect with someone else within the organization to get me a new key. So I'm sitting next to my door. I can't, at this point, I can't even stand. I'm sitting at the door, and someone from security actually brought me my key and asked if I needed anything else. And I said, no, I'm fine. Thank you. And all that. So fast forward a couple hours, and there's my phone rings, and it was the front desk letting me know that they were sending up some Gatorade and water and things of that nature to make sure that I stayed hydrated, which I thought was just a phenomenal gesture. And then about 3 hours after that, another call to ask how I was feeling. Would I be hungry for any soup or crackers or something like that? Brought up the soup, brought up crackers and all that, and that was awesome. So fast forward to the next day, wake up feeling much better. I go check out and look at my bill, and the only thing that's on my bill is that one additional night. There was no charge for Gatorade. There was no charge for soup. They didn't charge me for any of that. And I tell you, even talking about it now just warms my heart. But I damn near choked up standing there at the desk, because it meant so much to me, that fact that I was sick, the fact that someone was taking care of me, because there was no one to take care of me. It was just me. It went a long way. So that's part of where my loyalty really came in with Marriott. It was there before, but that sealed it with that experience. So at any rate, the moral to that story is communicate, communicate, communicate. If you're not feeling well, you'd be surprised how far someone would go. Now, would I have received that same treatment if I was, you know, didn't have status with Marriott? I don't know. I'd like to think that they would have still stepped up. Would that same, you know, level of care occurred at one of their lower tier hotels? I don't know. I can't answer that. All I can tell you is the experience I had. So anyway, so another experience I want to share with you. This didn't happen to me. It happened to a coworker at a former company I was with. We were traveling together on the road, attended some meetings, and kind of finished up. We both had some work we wanted to get done that night, and it had been a long day, so everybody was tired. So about 11 o'clock that night, maybe 10:30, I get a call on my cell phone, and it's this gentleman. And he says, I think I need to go to the hospital. Something's wrong. I don't feel well, all this. And I'm, you know, I'm half asleep, of course, because it's 10:30. And again, those of you that know me well know that that's a little bit past my bedtime, most cases. And so I, you know, kind of gather my thoughts, and I'm like, okay, I'll meet you down in the lobby. And this particular hotel was not a JW Marriott, but it was within the Marriott family. And so get down there and in the process, he kind of figured out the closest hospital and all that good stuff, and confirmed that with the desk, and hop in the vehicle and off we go, and get him to the hospital, and he gets checked in. And this was post-COVID, but there were still some COVID protocols, especially in healthcare. So unless you were patient, I don't believe you could wait in the waiting room of the emergency room. I think you had to wait in your vehicle or outside of the hospital, what have you. So I'm in the vehicle waiting, and of course, anyone who's been in that situation knows that, you know, it seems like it takes a lot longer for everything to happen than what is really happening. It probably wasn't that long, but I was there and, you know, kind of reached a point where I was like, man, I kind of need to use the facilities. Excuse me. So I head in to the hospital and checked on my coworker and all that good stuff. And he was still, you know, kind of going through tests and all that good stuff. And so I'm waiting and waiting. And I didn't want to leave in the event, you know, he got the green light to go and all that. So I stuck around. And as it turns out, fairly serious what he was dealing with. And he and I chatted about this before I recorded, before I started the episode today. And I told him I was not going to divulge any details. Don't want to violate HIPAA, but also I want to protect his right to privacy. But the point being, he's far from home, got very sick, and had I not been there or another coworker not been there, I think it probably would have been a 911 send an ambulance situation to get him to the hospital. He was really in no condition to operate a vehicle, so that wasn't an option. But think about, because again, it can happen. You know, your body doesn't say, well, hey, you're home, so now, you know, we can throw all kinds of stuff at you. You never know what's going to happen. So, you know, my recommendation is, you know, with our phones anymore being little computers, we can find out a lot of information. But, you know, where is the closest hospital? You know, making sure you have your insurance information at the ready, making sure that if you do need to contact loved ones for whatever reason, that information's accessible and you have good naming configurations in your phone in the event someone else needs to place those calls for you. All kinds of things to consider. Now, the good news is he was released the next day, and we flew home the next day, he went and saw his physician, and his physician, you know, agreed this was, you know, a lot scarier than originally thought. And, you know, and he's now managing that condition. But glad I was there to be of help. But something to be mindful of as you're out traveling for, you know, whether it be business or personal, the old saying, shit happens, and that's exactly right. So you want to, you know, be prepared for really anything. So anyway, so those are my two stories there about some, you know, best practices with if you get sick on the road, and a couple examples there. Let's move on to some industry news. This is going to be a relatively short section because I really zeroed in on a couple items. When you look at probably the biggest news story the last couple weeks as it relates to travel, it's been the incidents, and I say incidents, but they are incidents, the communication failures that have occurred at Newark International Airport. That's been for anyone who travels, that has been a top news story, and the airlines are trying to figure out how they manage that and deal with all that. Now, you know, they've had some technology issues, communication issues with the tower and aircraft, to where there's been some radio silence, which is not what you want when you're bringing in aircraft, or you have aircraft departing on live runways and all that. You add to that, there's runway construction at Newark. I pulled up some numbers before I started the podcast today. They're averaging delays, and I couldn't believe these numbers. Average delay right now at Newark is anywhere from 46 minutes on average to 4 hours and 10 minutes. That number just seemed absolutely staggering to me. Now, what you have to consider is they're grouping everything. So, you know, if plane could be delayed, a flight could be delayed, that has nothing to do with the airport infrastructure at all, but it gets lumped into that category. I've read a couple stories where I believe it was United is looking at reducing. In fact, they've already reduced the number of flights into Newark, but they're bringing in larger aircraft to help with that issue. So that's something that really is top of mind with the FAA to figure out how they work through some of these challenges, especially on the technology front. You want to make sure that there's good communication. And then just Monday in Denver, for about 90 seconds, there were 20 pilots or so that were not able to communicate with the Denver Air Route Traffic Control Center. Now, that is not the actual tower that's bringing the flights in. That's a regional office, and that particular office is in charge of covering 285,000 square miles, and it covers some or all of the states of Colorado, Arizona, New Mexico, Utah, Kansas, Nebraska, South Dakota, Wyoming, and Montana. Pretty big area. These particular pilots that suffered this 90-second halt in communication were going into the Denver International Airport. Now, as I understand it, controllers were able to use another frequency, and there was communication of some kind instructing the pilots on what to do. So it wasn't like they were completely in the dark for those 90 seconds, but the backups, or even the backups to the backups, had to be leveraged for that. So that story is not going away, folks. The technology aspect of our air traffic control system is something that I would imagine, took a sip of water, I would imagine is going to end up not only in multiple hearings before Congress, but I think we're going to see some emergency measures done sooner rather than later to get our technology within the towers and the air control system where they need to be. So look for that. And then lastly, as it relates to industry news, I did want to share that a preliminary report on that Bell helicopter accident in New York City that I spoke about in the last episode, that was released on May 7th. And again, that's a preliminary report. The final report could be months before that is released. If you're interested in reading that, it's not much information came out that's different from what we talked about on the show a couple weeks ago. But if you're interested in reading that report, you can pull that up on the NTSB website. So I do not know the content for our June 1 show. We'll figure that out. I'll look at that and may tease it before June 1st, but it'll be something fun and exciting, I'm sure. I hope. But I want to thank you for joining today. This has been a lot of fun. Enjoyed sharing this information. Enjoyed talking about the hotel world, things to consider. And also some the thoughts on if you fall ill on the road, some things to consider there. So with that, we'll end episode 2, season 2's podcast. Like we do with every show, we'll have Mr. Dwight Yoakam take us away. Dwight?
sad.